Okay, we're recording. Do that again.
No.
Okay, so hey, this is Santi. I'm here with my girlfriend Grace. She was on episode number 25, right?
25.
Okay, Grace, say hi to everyone.
Hey.
Nice. So we're here in, like, by the edge of our bed, just sat in the floor, and we're going to record an episode where one of our listeners, her name is Marina. She's been super cool, and she sent us a lot of questions. So we're going to do a full episode
hey,
to address
them.
Yeah, because she kind of admires you and she wanted to know a few things about a relationship and about what it's like to practice stoicism and how what it's like to, you know, live delivered lives and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's essentially like a list of follow-up questions from the first interview.
Yeah, awesome. But yeah, you don't necessarily have to listen to that one if you don't want to. So we're just going to do it. Okay, you ready?
Let's jump into it.
And yeah, let's address the microphone situation again. Like in the previous episode, we only have one microphone, and we're putting it, since because we're sat in the floor, it's in a chair that spins. How do you call this?
A spinny chair?
Yeah. And we're moving it back and forth between you and I. Right?
It's very effective, actually.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Ready? Okay, so first a few, like, just questions about you. And then we'll jump more into stoicism. So don't worry if you're into in this, like, you're listening to this because of the stoicism. It is about that as well. Yeah. Only one?
I think.
What do you mean? No, there are a few.
It's just the accent question.
Ah, yeah. The only one that's not very relevant to stoicism. Yeah, it's okay. Okay, so first question that Marina asked, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I think it's Marina. Marina. I think so. Either way, thanks for all the questions. Here they are. So, first one is, what is your girlfriend's accent? So, Grace, go ahead.
I thought, yeah, it's quite clear. It's British. British mm-hmm. English. Southern English. Accent. Pretty standard. Well, I think everyone thinks that accent standard. But yeah, that's what it is.
Right.
Cool. Born and bred.
More specific? Where is it from?
It doesn't really have a... Just south.
So?
Yeah, like Southampton, New Forest, which will mean nothing to most people. So, yeah.
Google Maps. Cool. Yeah, because she said she likes it a lot and she's interested in different accents. She couldn't identify yours. But yeah, getting that out of the way, let's get into the philosophy of stuff. She asked, how did I introduce you to Stoicism? And how did you react? Is a follow-up question. So first, I think I talked a bit about, like, the origin of how we got into Stoicism, but just a quick recap, is I was feeling quite depressed and quite lost and confused, as per usual. And this was like 2 years ago. And I mean, I've always struggled with a lot of overthinking, a lot of anxiety. And it was in the time when Grace and I were in a long-distance relationship, which lasted a year, right?
Yeah, our relationship has lasted longer. We did long distance for a year.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. But no, yeah, I was feeling definitely anxious about that and a lot of other things. And just like the way my mind goes, it was crazy. So Grace did suggest that I go to... She's making weird sounds.
Sorry.
She did suggest that I go to a psychologist. So I ended up going, very taboo. Like, I'm from Ecuador, South America. We're currently living here in England. But yeah, it's quite taboo still. Like, if you're going to the psychologist, you're quite crazy. Which, yeah, it's sometimes tough to do.
Which you are.
Yeah. So I did go. I was starting to, you know, try to solve a bit of my overthinking and my anxiety. I even thought, what did I think I was? I thought I was bipolar. And
yeah, that's the one, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I honestly thought I was bipolar. My psychologist said that even though I do have a very obsessive personality and different things, like, it's very unlikely that I do have bipolar disorder. So yeah, that was a big relief because I was taking it for granted. I was looking at tutorials on how to overcome life being bipolar. Like, it's crazy. Like, and I don't know. I mean, I just researched a lot about being bipolar, and anyone there who's struggling with that is a crazy situation to be in. So I'm super thankful I don't have that. I was also thinking I might have, like, OCD, so obsessive compulsive disorder. Again, like, she did say I am very obsessive in a lot of things, but hopefully it's not a disorder. So yeah, it was a huge relief, but sometimes when you're in that mindset, you kind of, at least this was my thought process, like, at least someone telling me that I do have something might have been able to justify or maybe help explain why all the negative emotions. So I was left really confused as well. But of course, I'm super thankful I don't have those things. At least, hope not. But yeah, then she recommended a book called The Antidote, which you heard as well, right?
Yeah, I listened to it too.
Yeah, listen because audiobooks, the future. Yeah, yeah. You're right. You listen. Yeah, cool. So that book, like my psychologist recommended one chapter and then I just got the whole book and I got over it like really, really fast because of my obsessive behavior. And I loved it because there was one chapter where there was stoicism being explained. This whole book talks about the power of negative thinking for people who can't stand optimism, right? And I've always been an optimist. I've always been like, yeah, let's positivity, let's just get happy, and like, you know, like if you're just happy and motivated, you can do anything, but then you end up quite distracted by emotions. Any thought on that?
On you being an optimist or about stoicism?
Whatever. Wait. No, yeah, that goes to the next question. So yeah, that was...
He's gone off the question.
No, yeah.
He's just started talking about himself and he's completely forgotten what the question was.
No, it was... it is true. Yeah, the question is how I introduce grace to stoicism. Well, okay. So after I got all excited about stoicism and being like, maybe this is a mind frame, framework to overcome negative thoughts and negative emotions, and then how can I apply this in my life? I started, you know, reading a lot about it. That's when I started really reading a lot. I didn't read a lot before that. And I get really excited about it. So because we were in a long distance relationship, it was all about talking. Like we had Skype calls, video calls, phone calls, texts. Like it's all about talking. So what was in my mind? Stoic philosophy. I was talking a lot about how I felt, as per usual. Mm-hmm. And, and that's how I got Grace excited about this. Now, the follow-up question is, how did she react?
How did I react? I think I reacted quite positively. I tend to be fairly open to learning about new ideas and new things, even if I don't agree with them.
Sorry, checking that's still recording.
Okay. I think in general, like what he was telling me about it, I guess Santi was learning kind of very gradually from The Antidote, so it wasn't reading kind of a Ryan Holiday book straight away. And so when I read that as well, it wasn't like hardcore stoicism. It was like various different ways to help overcome kind of mental struggles and help kind of put you on a more steady path in general, which I thought was really good. I think I was in my final year of university myself, so actually having some stoic principles and practices to put in place was very helpful for me, just because I had like the general stress of writing a dissertation and exams and stuff. So I kind of welcomed the whole concept. One, because it was helping Santi with everything that was going on for him, and it was actually something that he could put into practice and stick to, and it was like a proper kind of guidelines. Like he's told me a few times before how he used to get his philosophy from song lyrics, yeah, and from like films and what, like all these different various sources. And obviously you're going to get so many contradictions if you're just listening to kind of whatever is in your earphones at the moment and finding meaning out of that. Not to say that there isn't meaning in those things, but actually being able to put them into practice in your own life and actually use them to help you to overcome things like anxiety, it's a lot helpful to have like one
making noises. That was the sound of my water bottle when you hit it. It goes like, carry on.
It's very tuneful. I've lost my trail of thought now. Just the idea that having like stoicism as one set of guidelines in order to help you overcome different mental struggles that you might have is a better way to do it. And the whole kind of CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy side of that is obviously fancy.
Fancy, wow. Psychologist.
That always helps. Yeah, cool.
Awesome. Yeah, because she did say, how did you react? Because, I mean, not everyone would be interested in philosophy nowadays. And you were very lucky to...
It's the people's philosophy, baby.
Oh, sorry, yeah. You're very lucky to have each other and share the same view on life. What did you say? The people's philosophy?
That's Stoicism.
Yeah, the philosophy of the streets. And that's what they called them in ancient Greece and Rome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, next question. I wish people could see, but it's a bottle that you got me for my birthday, I think. Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's metal and it sounds cool. Yours does the same. Go for it. Wow.
Some great
next question. Okay. How did you manage to stay in a long-distance relationship? Mm-hmm. How difficult was it for you? Do you think lifestyle philosophy contributed to your relationship and help you with it? So, like, first, how did you manage to stay in a long-distance relationship?
Not very well. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Fair to say. Long distance was really hard for us because of kind of...
It wasn't worth it. Get out. Get out.
Don't do it. Don't do it if you have the chance. Or it's not worth it. It's so hard, especially for like a year. It's worth it now.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have been able to do 2 years. I probably wouldn't have been able to do a year and a half, honestly. However, saying that, that wasn't because of philosophy. It was other...
adversities in life and complications. I think we might have... I don't think... I mean, no, there's... Let's keep some things private. But yeah. Like... no, complicated stuff. But I think we talked about it a little bit in previous episode where you were here in 25.
Mm-hmm.
At least about the adversity of that kind of stuff. But yeah, either way, like... You're right. It's really hard. Of course, we're joking when we say it's not worth it. Like... It's hard. Like, it's hard to ever give, like, advice about relationship to anyone. Because, like, how can you know where someone is at in life? Like, it's hard to just give advice in general. Like, I don't think every advice should be taken as this is the way you should do things, because we're all at different points in life. We all have different lives. So whether it's worth it for you to keep going is really up to you. Like, if you're going through that or if you're ever thinking about that, it's something so complicated to answer. Go ahead.
I think, yeah, I agree. It's really hard. It just depends on your relationship. A more practical thing that I found you kind of come to understand when you're in a long distance relationship is spending time with people, especially with like boyfriends and girlfriends. A lot of the time you'll spend with them in person, you won't necessarily be talking all the time. It would just be kind of spending time watching films or kind of going for walks or doing things.
Reading together and such.
Yeah, doing things where you don't have to be having conversations. Whereas when you get to long distance relationships, most of the interaction, it's over Skype or over calls or something. And therefore, it's all talking usually. So actually, if you can... And that gets quite intense because you feel like you should be spending all this time together, but actually you don't necessarily want to be talking, you just want to kind of be with that person. So if you can find ways to be with that person virtually but not necessarily have to be having a conversation, but just be sharing something. So like, we quite like either watching shows together and kind of playing them at the same time while we were on a call or on Skype, or like watching films and stuff, and actually being able to, or even like falling asleep at the same time sometimes, which was quite nice. So finding things like that to do, which kind of takes the pressure of always making conversation, but still allows you to spend quality time together, I think is a helpful tip, I'd say.
Nice. That's good. Yeah. And then the part after that was like, did philosophy help us overcome that? I think definitely. I don't think I would have made it, at least for my part, without philosophy.
Oh, no.
Like, honestly, like I was finally, like after like a difficult part in my life, the way I was feeling, I managed to get really excited about philosophy, and I started seeing how these things were applying in my life, how I could apply them. It was very gradual. I think any type of improvement took me longer than I wish could have been. I wish I was more patient. I still wish I was more patient right now, because I still get in these ruts quite often, to be honest. But But yeah, no, philosophy definitely helped. And yeah, that's about it. So next question, make the bottle sound. Perfect. Okay. What are you saying? Yeah, okay. Did I understand you right from previous episode that you compare psychology and therapy to stoicism? You mentioned it briefly, but can you explain a little bit about that? Go for it.
Not really. So I don't think I know enough about psychology or about therapy because I've never had it or studied it to actually know the differences. I think from my perspective, it can be quite similar because of the whole CBT thing. Ooh.
Cognitive behavioral therapy.
Just because it's a way of helping you overcome mental adversities. And it's like a mental framework to put in place. But I feel like I've already spoken about that, so I won't go on.
But I will go on, because thankfully we have a guest today, Jordan Peterson. Can you please come? We have Jordan Peterson in the studio today.
Oh, my God.
And that's not an insignificant thing. if you know Jordan Peterson, he's the best true idol of mine. Such a cool guy. Either way, we joke a lot about how epic he is in this house. Yeah, we have a little statue of Jordan. We don't, but we should make one. Yeah. Either way, no, I bring him up because I think he really combines psychology with philosophy. I don't think he particularly talks about stoicism as a thing, but definitely the framework and the way he approaches it is very similar. And yeah, if there's anyone who wants to know about the link of psychology and stoicism particularly, like cognitive behavioral therapy comes straight from stoicism. That is the therapy that I went through and is really influenced by stoic philosophy. There's a book by Donna Robertson called Cognitive Behavioral Therapy and Stoicism or something like that, which I still haven't read. I'm sorry. But I should read it because it's really
slacker.
Good. Sounds good. Yeah. Sorry. Either way, thanks, Jordan Peterson, for being here. He had to go. Okay. What is that? The next one is, okay, so, yeah, referring back to something we talked in previous episode 25, is what is negative thinking, negative visualization? I mean, people tend to visualize good things. This is the question. People tend to visualize good things, picture themselves having what they want, and so on. So the question is, what is negative visualization? Yeah, there we go. Can you explain it a bit? Do you want to?
I think you should explain it.
I'll take over. Okay. So negative visualization really comes down to anticipating things before they happen, in the sense that understanding that things could go wrong. And if they could go wrong, it's good to anticipate what could go wrong. So like there's that phrase, like hope for the best, prepare for the worst. If you prepare for the worst, you're not so anxious about what could happen. You have a plan, or at least you have the understanding that life will go on, or at least the universe will go on in the case that your life doesn't go on. Like it's not the end of the world, literally. Like even, I don't know, I mean, I don't want to go as far as saying like the death of a loved one is not something that would cause us a lot of grief. Of course it is, but if you anticipate it and you recognize that it might happen, that it will happen, like someone you love will die, like that is a sad truth that we have to just make peace with. But if we have that understanding, then probably we won't be as depressed when it happens. And, you know, even if you are depressed when it happens, at least you're training yourself for future adversities. And it's just anticipating things before they happen. It comes from the Latin premeditatio malorum, if I may, which is the premeditation of evils. So to premeditate on future evils or future things that might happen, to just go ahead and think at the beginning of the day, I will meet with this type of things, I will meet it with all this adversity, but I will be able to overcome it. It's not the end of the world. I can deal with this. And that way, counterintuitively, you have a lot of more peace of mind. Because if you're always saying like, no, I'm a rich person, I'm happy, nothing bad ever happens to me, like you will be disappointed a lot more often, and it will give you a lot more suffering. So I do believe this is a better framework. Of course, it's kind of like seeing if it works in your life. I do believe it can like benefit a lot of people. The Antidote by Oliver, I think it's Bookerman, the one, that guy we were talking about, is a great book to really expand on the power of this type of thinking. Mm-hmm. Anything to it?
I think you summed it up pretty well. Just like if you've got a situation, like an upcoming situation, like a presentation or something, instead of just thinking, oh, it's all going to be fine, it's all going to go really well, actually thinking, even if the projector breaks and the audience is really noisy and you have a coughing fit in the middle and it's like the worst possible situation, actually, after all of that, you're still going to be okay. Like, you're going to be fine. You might be a bit embarrassed, but it's not going to, like, end you. It'll be all right. And just kind of knowing that will give you peace that even if the worst thing would happen, you're still going to be fine and you can still keep going.
Perfect. Make the buzzer sound for next question.
Oh.
This one sounds better? No. Oh, okay, yeah, that sounds good.
Sorry.
Okay. The next one is... Yeah, so it's like, don't you feel sometimes that your philosophy goes against the worldview trends? So people tend to show their money, power, level of life by buying expensive and usually useless things. Living alone in huge apartments of 5 or 6 rooms wear expensive brands just to show their income or whatever. Grace mentioned consumerism, which is quite the opposite. Like this tendency of minimalism. Do your friends understand your view on this aspect? That is a question. So it's quite long, but like it's mostly, you know, like what is it like to go again like these trends of consumerism and to apply minimalism in our lives and not to wish to have all these material possessions and so on. What do you think?
I think, yeah, that's what that's how we're trying to live our lives. I think the question is, how do we live our lives like that when everyone else is doing things differently and when our friends might not understand these things? Thankfully, we're both millennials, so our generation, I think, is a bit more tuned into that kind of stuff, or at least wants to appear like they're tuned into that stuff. Like, I know a lot of my friends do kind of, they care about being more sustainable from like, it's all from like different reasons. Quite often it's for like environmental reasons, or just kind of because they've watched people on YouTube doing the same thing. So I think sometimes I don't like to throw it down people's face, like throw it in people's faces. Is that what I'm trying
Never
to say?
Throw things at people's faces.
Never throw things at people's faces.
It's not polite.
It's really not.
It's unstoic.
He keeps stealing the microphone. And you've completely thrown me off. No, give me back.
No, I'm just going to remind you what he said. You don't want to like show off by telling people that you're more minimalist than they are.
So if you find yourself in a situation, if I find myself in a situation where I'm talking to someone who seems to be quite consumeristic, is that a word?
Yes.
We'll go with it. Instead of being like, oh yes, I don't like to buy anything new or buy things from shops who use child slaves to make their clothes, blah, blah, blah. Because I think it's just not always helpful. You're only doing it because you want to stroke your own ego rather than actually help them. You just want to see, oh, this is how I live my life and it's so much better than you. When obviously that's not a good way to approach anything. So I don't do that. I try not to do that anyway. But I think it's more just kind of talking about things that you have in common and then bringing up kind of more neutral ideas, not even saying that you necessarily put them into practice all the time, but just like, ah, this is a interesting documentary I watched or something like that. Like with minimalism especially. However, I don't think it's that bad. I think you just have to get used to it. But my friends are pretty cool, so don't have that.
The trick is not to have friends. I don't have any friends.
yeah. That's the other option.
No, to be honest, I don't know. I think I do struggle with this. I think Grace said better things that I could say. I am still very judgmental, and my ego is not in a good place still. So I don't have, I don't want to, you know, like I want to be honest with these things, like not pretend to be like the social media people on the other side of your life. Like if you're listening to this and you're saying like, oh, this sounds like a cool life to live, or like they seem to have things figured out. Like I really don't. And I am very judgmental with these things. I don't know. I kind of want to live my life the way I live it. And when I see people going against that or talking about like shoes or like fancy wristwatches or whatever, I'm like, ugh, I do roll my eyes and I wish I didn't so much. That is as honest as I can be right now.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Hey, give it back. You keep stealing the microphone. I think with consumerism, it's always going to be right there, and with adverts and everything, you're always going to have
advertisement sucks.
You're going to have so much pressures all the time coming from you, let alone from like all your friends that are buying different things, and you might be jealous of the stuff that they've got. It becomes quite hard. But I think, what's her name, Marina had actually said it in her question, like you can either spend all your money on all these nice things and actually be very lonely and not place importance in the more valuable things, in my opinion. So actually, if you work out what in your life is valuable to you, then you can decide where you want to put your money and what you want to spend your money on, be that kind of experiences with your friends and family or buying all this designer clothes and Apple things and I don't even know, private jets, you know,
buying a lot of apples, like some people just really love buying apples. Favorite fruits. Yeah, either way, next question. Cool, nice. No, I really like what he said, thanks for sharing that.
No problem.
Okay, so the question goes a bit about books. In what way are printed books better than audio? I think you said you want to reduce the amount of audiobooks you consume. Why do you think printed are different? I think this is to you. Yeah, you said that.
Yeah, this is a big debate between me and Santi, because he's very much pro audiobook and I like a physical book. Saying that, I do actually read more audiobooks than physical books nowadays, just because my commute to work is changed, so now it's just easier to listen to books. However, I've realized something the other day, is that I prefer I prefer audiobooks if they're fiction books, and I prefer reading books if they're like non-fictional kind of self-help in inverted commas. Just because I found like if they're non-fiction and I should be gaining knowledge from them, then it's more important that I remember them. And for me personally, having a physical book and actually being able to read the words, I process that information a lot more thoroughly, and I'll actually kind of remember it better if I'm reading it and looking at it. Whereas if I'm listening to it in an audiobook, quite often I'll be like walking around and I'll get a bit distracted. So with that, I prefer listening to fiction books, where it's obviously if they're good books, then you don't really want to miss any of it, but I can listen to it and just kind of go along with the story and enjoy the story without feeling bad because I haven't remembered all of it, or there's one part that I've maybe got distracted by a pigeon or something and so haven't listened to all of it. So that's my opinion about audiobooks versus real books, but you probably think something different.
No, I like that, and definitely I don't think it should be like one is better than the other. Like I think even like revisiting, like if you have access to the audiobook and the printed book, that is amazing, because different ways to get information in. Like I don't really read fiction books, and I wish I did more, and probably I should start reading more fiction books. You read more fiction books? Way more than I do.
Fiction books.
Yeah. No, I mean, to me, like, I do have this affection for audiobooks because they saved me from being illiterate. I didn't used to read at all. Like, honestly, I was even, like, all judgmental, saying, like, oh, no, you don't have to necessarily read books to be smart. Like, you can watch videos. And because I learned everything I knew from from watching videos like growing up.
Just look at the pictures.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I was quite pretentious. I like, oh no, yeah, bookworm people, like people who just get everything from books, they're too pretentious and stuff. But then I realized, like, no, that's where the good stuff is. Like, that's where people put a lot of effort into trying to communicate something. That is how you can really get a lot of value out of something. As I can't believe books are so cheap. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, you can sell an online course with the same content of a book, and it would cost like 10 times more or whatever. But if you just read the book, it's so cheap. And I think it's even unfair for authors that it's so cheap that companies like Amazon have made this like a huge place where everything is at, so that everything has to be cheap as hell. But yeah, that's another argument. Either way, audiobooks to me, like they do help me connect with the content more. I mean, the epitome of epicness is to be able to read an audiobook and take notes at the same time. That is the best, but I wish I did it more. The problem with audiobooks is that sometimes you fall down the trap of multitasking. As long as it's something that doesn't require brain power, I'm okay. Like, to me, cooking, I do it just like that. Like, as I cook, I listen, or as I commute, or as I walk, or as I juggle, right? Do you juggle?
Yeah, I juggle. Do you juggle?
I juggle. Either way, yeah, we practice juggling. Do you want to tell us your achievements in juggling?
It's not quite an achievement yet. I'm learning how to juggle. I'm getting there. I can do three balls nearly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we watched a YouTube video and then I decided I wanted to learn how to juggle. It's essentially the story. But yeah, nice. Doing all right.
Because I've been juggling since the day I was born. But just kidding. No, I as a kid, I loved juggling with three balls. And then as Grace got interested, I said like, okay, the next goal is four balls. So I can almost do it. I'm not there yet. But I'm almost there.
Yeah, he needed to make sure he was going to be better than me at something. So yeah. Now he has to learn four balls.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that ends our thoughts on audiobooks versus books.
And juggling,
yeah. Either way, make the butter sound. Next question. There you go. So she said, some thoughts on the quote-unquote create more than you consume point.
See, I've read questions, point? And I agree with her with this. So read it all.
Okay. If everyone followed this rule, who would consume what we all create? There would be no point in creating. If everyone only creates their stuff and didn't care about other people's creations, I feel like I'm failing to explain my question clearly. Haha. What I'm trying to say is that there should be some balance, right? If everyone only stayed focused on creating something, adding value to other people's lives, then who would consume all this value and stuff? That's my fault. There should be some people who don't create that much, but who consume more. Otherwise, it would be useless to create anything, as no one would pay attention to it. Or did I miss something? Okay, so that's quite long, but I think we all get it.
Yeah, I'll answer it quickly because I think this is more of a Santi question, because you are the creator out of us two. For me, I do agree with what she's saying. I think, especially with social media, it's really hard because we've had the conversation a few times about like Santi wants to be posting on Instagram and using the platforms because they're a really good way of like getting to people, but also he doesn't like, or we don't really enjoy that much kind of, and after doing the digital detox, we've realized actually it doesn't make us feel good going on Instagram for long amount of time, or like Facebook or stuff. But also if Santi wants to create on these platforms but not use them, isn't that a bit like he can't really believe in them that much if he's, you keep distracting me. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Every time I talk, he's like pointing at different like bits and stuff. It makes me.
It's because she was making this sound of her hand against her jeans. I said, like, stop that. Sorry, carry on.
It was the background music. It was ambiatic. Wow. Thank you. But no, so I do think that if you're using a platform, you should like it enough that you're actually, as well as kind of putting content out on there, you're consuming at least some. But at the same time, I just think unless you're very self-disciplined, it's hard to go on those like social networking sites. and not just feel worse after going on them. But yeah, okay. But you say something because you're actually like creating stuff for them.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, next question will be a bit more about social media. So I think we'll transition to that in a bit. I just want to address a bit more of creating more than you consume. That was the point. And if everyone is creating, then who is there to consume? The thing is that, I mean, it's tough because we cannot... I mean, I don't think there is a world where everyone would create more than they consume. I just don't think it's human nature. I don't think most people are wish to create that much, or I just would advise anyone to try at least to create more than they consume, even if it's not possible. I don't think I'm there yet. I definitely consume more still. But honestly, like the people I admire the most because they are creating way more than they consume. And well, to your point a little bit on like using the
Who's
platform.
That?
Derek Sievers. Oh yeah. Shout out.
How do you know?
He's just a boss. You just have to trust.
Yeah, but I don't think you can know that he's creating more than he consumes. I think even with like the biggest creators, they're consuming so much more. And I think that's kind of part of why they're so good, is they're able to get ideas from different places.
Yeah. Well, no, definitely. I mean, you do have to learn from someone. Maybe the create more than you consume applies more to places like social media, maybe, because if you are reading a lot, that is a way of consuming, of course, right? But it's a medium that is actually like making you grow as a person and knowing more things. So I do feel the medium changes, because even like online or blog posts, even though some might be really valuable, you have to really dig deep to find which ones are valuable. It's very draining to just be reading headlines and all these contradictions and all this stuff. So yeah, I don't believe it's possible that more like the most people will create and less will consume. Of course, there needs to be an audience, kind of, but there is also this concept, like if you're an artist or if you're someone who creates, the question is, would you create if there was no audience to see that? And by answering that question, you can know where your intentions are at, because then you can know, are you really doing this for the love of it, for its own sake, because you really love it? Or do you just want people to recognize you as famous or an authority in a topic or something? And yeah, the key is to be honest with yourself, because some types of creations are really made for the consumption of someone, of an audience. And of course, it's amazing because you can also serve an audience. But like some things are really because you love the process of it. Not necessarily because it's selfishly done for yourself, but because you love the process of making and of creating. So I think that's more of the point. But I do agree with this whole concept of like people need to consume in order for others to create. Like, yeah, if you're talking about marketing and economics. And stuff. Yeah, economics. That was tough. Okay, make the bottle sound. Next question. Woo! Okay, so we talked about trying a digital detox. Did you try it? Ah, this was before we did it. Yeah, we mentioned that we were going to do it. We did do it.
Did we not do it?
At that point, we said we're going to do it.
I thought we'd already done it.
No, I said, like, what do you think about it? I announced it in the podcast that I was going to do it, and you joined. Did you try it? How did it go? How do you control the time you spend on social media? So yeah, we did it.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. And take over.
Yeah, I think you probably have done a podcast about this already, but what were the questions regarding it? You've just
mostly what was it like, the whole experience?
What was it like? The whole experience was good. I mean, it was pretty hard. It took some getting used to. I definitely read a lot during those 30 days, and actually it really kind of helped me start reading a lot more than I had been before, which is one of the things I wanted to get out of it. It also, I think I always felt that after like coming home from work, I needed to like just kind of, I always say, like decompress. I need to just relax and not talk to anyone, not listen to anyone. And my way of decompressing was always to watch like The Office or something on Netflix, and just kind of have some me time. And actually I thought like, oh, reading's going to be too much energy for my decompression time. But actually finding that's another good way to relax, and it doesn't have to just be kind of the absolute minimum effort needed for entertainment, which is watching TV, I think. But apart from that, actually kind of minimizing, because we did no social media, no Netflix, which was the big one for me, and then kind of only, was it like half an hour of YouTube every other day or something?
Yeah.
It was something like that. It was pretty restricted, to be fair. And it was like no TV as well, because we didn't have a TV at that point. And so we had to be super conscious about what we were watching on YouTube, and we usually watched it together. And actually doing it together was really helpful, because we were able to keep each other accountable. But for me, it was really good, and actually it's had a lasting impact. Like, I think Instagram was the biggest impact that it's had on me. Like, I used to have Instagram and Facebook and stuff on my phone, and I got rid of them during the detox. I actually just didn't re-upload them onto my phone at all for about probably another few months after that. I think at least another 2 months after the detox, I just kept them off, because I was like, actually, I still don't need them if I'm kind of slowly getting rid of the whole, like, the flinch of wanting to go on your phone every time there's like a pause or you're not doing anything. And so I did end up re-downloading Instagram for a bit, and it only lasted for about like a week or two that I had it on my phone, because I was suddenly very conscious that I would only ever go on it, one, if I was bored, and two, well, okay, one, I would only ever go on it when I was bored. Two, I would always spend at least twice as long as I was planning to actually scrolling through everything, because, you know, the crazy algorithm just keeps you on there forever. And then three, I noticed I would always feel worse after I'd come off the app than I had done going in. So I would go in because I was bored, and then I'd come off feeling like worse about myself and about life in general. So I was just like, actually, this isn't benefiting my life anymore. Maybe I thought it was, but actually there's other ways of keeping up to date with my friends and like keeping track of everyone. I don't have to put myself through this. And I knew I would just get more and more used to it as I kept it on my phone for longer. So I just decided to get rid of it and to undone it, just delete it off my phone again. And kind of very rarely I'll go on it on my computer, and I do go on Facebook on my computer sometimes, but only for short periods of time. And like the amount of time that I've saved from doing that, and just the reduction in social anxiety that I'd get from not having them on my phone is just great. And now it's just normal, so I'm used to it. Yeah, but how about you?
Yeah, no, it's really good. Like, the whole point that you made is like reestablishing and improving your relationship with social media and technology in general. It turns out I found it. Like, the episode that I talked all about my experience was episode 27. So I don't want to repeat much of what I said there. So if you're really interested, check episode 27. And I highly recommend, I mentioned it there, to read the book Digital Minimalism by Cal Newport. Like, honestly, it's a very nuanced topic. And I do believe it requires like understanding it deeper, because I don't know, I think there's so many blog posts and so many podcasts and so many things about like the negative sides of social media, trying to help you understand a little bit, but it's a bit more complicated than that. So
what's that YouTube video?
The book is great. Which one?
The one you showed me yesterday, just like the 3-minute one with all the article titles.
Oh, okay. So there's this amazing YouTube channel. Yeah. No. Thanks for saying that. So I need to make a whole episode about this. It's so good. No, I do know. It is The Dictionary of Obscure Sorrows. It's a channel dedicated to create words, to make up words for feelings that are very complex and that maybe they don't have a word for. It's amazing. I'm working on creating my own words as well. And Chris was helping me. It's so cool. But there's this one called Paro. And it talks about,
spell it.
Yeah, so P-A-R-O with a circumflex in the A, which is the little hat on top of the A. And it's a made-up word, but the feeling is to, I can't remember the exact definition, but it's this overwhelming sensation of always, I think I could explain the beauty of it better. So there's a lot of like articles with why you should do this, why you should do that, why you shouldn't be, strive to be happy, why you should try to be successful this way, why you should intermittent fasting, why you shouldn't do intermittent fasting, why you should diet, why you shouldn't. Raising your kids, you're doing it wrong. Money, you're doing it wrong. You know, like when you go online, you find all these crazy things, all this crazy advice telling you what to do. And this word describes kind of like that feeling of overwhelm, of like as if whatever you're going to do, you're already lost because someone is always telling you the way you should do things. And then there's someone else telling you that that is wrong, or that you're just feeling inadequate. And it's a really good topic. I'll link it in the show notes because it's an amazing video that really captures the feeling of general social media and general like blog post and advice online. It's quite crazy. But yeah. Yeah, we did it for 30 days a few months ago, the social media detox, yeah. Because we never mentioned it was 30 days. But yeah, episode 27, I talk a bit more about that. And the book I recommend is Digital Minimalism. Make the bottle sound. Go for it. Okay. Next question is dichotomy of control. Could you please explain it a bit more? I get that it claims that one should not focus on what is not in their control. But then how do you do this? She said, I struggle with anxiety sometimes. I often feel nervous about things I can't change. For example, even if I understand that I shouldn't do something, I still can't help it. Can this concept show a way to solve the problem? What do you have to say?
So dichotomy of control, what's yeah. in your control and what's not in your control. I think...
Wait, expand a bit on that. So the Stoic concept of distinguishing between what is in your control and what is not, and to only focus on what is in your control and to let go of what is not.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I was just kind of reminding myself yeah. more than anything. How to use that to cope with managing with anxiety. Whew, what a question. I think it could be really helpful because I think a lot of the time people get anxious about externalities, these things that they don't control in their lives, like if they're going to be late for something because of public transport, or they're going to be worried about what someone says to them. Whereas actually all of these things that aren't directly in your power to control, it's not going to be something that you can control. Like, it's pretty self-evident. It's a very simple concept in a way. Like, you don't control the things that you don't control, and therefore you shouldn't spend time worrying about those things, because no amount of worrying that you do is ever going to actually affect these external things, because they're not impacted by anything that you do because they're externals. So yeah, you can focus. Well, yeah, the whole idea is focusing on what you do have control over. So the things that you say, the actions that you take, just the kind of the mentality that you have, which is obviously easier said than done. But actually, if you focus on these things and try and teach yourself that these externals, what other people say to you, what other things happen in the world, just the fact that you can't do much about them, actually that's going to help you to be... wait, I can finish, I can finish. If you don't focus on them and make them have like a negative or positive impact on your kind of mental well-being or your life, then it's going to be a lot better for you, because then you can actually internalize your happiness or happiness, just kind of your emotions, and actually then only the things that you do control will impact your kind of happiness, and these other things that are outside your control won't have as much of an effect on you. And hopefully, I think probably the biggest everyday thing that this is going to have an effect on is like the amount of complaining that people do. Here in the UK, we love to complain. complain about everything, especially the weather. And obviously that's like a pure example of something that is not inside anyone's control, minus all the global warming stuff, obviously. But in general, isn't inside your control, yet we love to complain about it. So if we decide that actually we can't change that either way, so there's no point us spending time worrying about it or just being annoyed by it, actually that's gonna improve your own quality of life and not affect anything. Okay.
Nice, that was good. Mm-hmm. So like in general, like the concept about the dichotomy of control is something that it sounds obvious, and like some things are in your control, some things are not. Focus on the ones that are. It sounds obvious, but what's interesting is that this thought really comes from Stoic philosophy, like Epictetus, the Stoic philosophy, who was a slave. That's, if you don't know about him, I don't know where to send you, but Epictetus, yeah, I don't know which episode I've talked about him, but sorry. Yeah, either way, maybe Google him, he's amazing. But yeah, he was a slave, and he really was the first one to put this into words, like in the handbook, which is his most famous, one of his most famous writing. He talks about, that's how he starts, like some things are in our control, some things are not. And it's our duty to focus on those that are. Like that is really the basics of how we can have a more tranquil life in general. But like the whole concept about the dichotomy of control really is to train to live this way. It's not something that you can just decide. I don't think. I mean, it's definitely something that takes like some time to get used to. And the problem is, it's complicated to just say like, okay, right now I'm going to start applying this. Because what happens is you get also in this trap of saying like, I shouldn't complain about the weather. I shouldn't feel bad about this thing. And now you're being very self-critical and you're also damaging yourself. So it's kind of like starting to notice, so that when, as time passes, you will learn this lesson more emotionally, because we can know it rationally, but until we know it emotionally, it really won't make much of a difference. So it really is about just reminding yourself, being aware of it, being aware that maybe you don't control about this. If you do get anxious about something, just, you know, be self-compassionate, be yourself, to be like, okay, this time I got like a bit affected by this thing, but it doesn't mean that I'm doing it wrong or that I'm doing philosophy wrong. I think that's something I definitely struggle with, like pushing myself to be like, no, you have to be a stoic, you have to be better. But like, no, that's very damaging. So yeah, take it easy, but definitely try to understand the concept. That's about it for that one. Make the sound. There we go. Okay, which one is it? Okay, sorry. Can I apply stoicism to my relationship somehow if my partner is not into philosophy? No, you can't.
Yeah, you can. No, you have to break up with them.
No, of course you can.
Over text.
That's savage. That's a Epicurean. Either way, no, yeah, of course. I mean, if anything, that is a really good example of dichotomy of control. Like, you don't have power over the philosophy that someone else applies in their lives, even if it's someone close to you. You can't change people. Like, you cannot impose your values on others. You can definitely communicate and try to express why your values or your beliefs or anything you're thinking is important to you. Hopefully you'll convince them. Hopefully they'll want to be on board. But if they don't, that is a great example of something outside of your control. And as long as you try to change it, you will suffer for it. So it's definitely not about trying to impose your beliefs on others. I think religion does a good job with that, and it causes a lot of conflict. Like, that's why there's been wars for years.
Let's not get into that.
Let's not get into that. Although last episode, we talked about that a little bit. So yeah, if you want to check that out, that is interesting. But yeah, of course. No. And just a little side note, Stoicism is not a religion. You can definitely combine it with any religion you might have. I feel like that's always a disclaimer that has to be said sometimes. Because even though it is a belief system, like, it doesn't really, you can take the tools, you can take what you want from it and apply it to whatever, anything else. Now, if you do want to live like fully Stoic, like, it requires some things, which is quite hard. And when it comes to a relationship, I think it's really useful to take some of the Stoic tools. And the Stoic tools are really broken down to things that we talked recently. dichotomy of control, negative visualization, concepts like that. I believe all of those are super helpful. And if you want, Grace, you can explain a bit more of those. But just to close my point on that, is that you can really like go more hardcore into stoicism and to try to explain, try to see the world from this point of view that does require a bit more of sacrifice and does require like a bit more commitment. But I do believe that stoic tools can help you in your relationship in a lot of ways. But sorry, I just kind of went, I've been in a tangent, but you bring it back. Go.
Yeah. Okay. So I agree with you, Santi. In general, I think the great thing about stoicism is the fact that you can pick and choose. Like, it's not a religion. You don't have to take it all. You can take the bits that you like. Like, I'm not as keen as taking the kind of, what's it called? Voluntary discomfort. Because, you know, I like my showers hot. But I think even with the relationships, you don't have to call it philosophy. You don't even have to call it stoicism. You can just take different things that you've learned through reading about stoicism and apply them to your relationships. Can be romantic relationships or just friendships and stuff. Using the tools, like Santi said, I think one that we use is a bit of a memento mori. So
that will be the next question. So let me read that one, because it will connect it properly.
Okay, but I'm finished then.
No. Keep that in mind because it's really good, but I want to connect it to this part. Is the main idea of stoicism memento mori? There was a sound there. Either way, yeah, go on. There's a bit more context, but I'll let you go. Yeah, go.
I'm just going to carry on saying the thing I was going to say before you interrupted.
Sorry for that. Go.
But anyway, what Santi and I use if we're arguing, or if we're kind of having a disagreement and we're not liking each other as much as we usually do, and if we can feel ourselves getting quite angry and like we're going to say something that we're going to regret, one of us will try and actually calm down enough to say, actually, let's just stop talking. And we call it like, do you want to memento mori? But kind of really it's about just taking a minute to pause, and usually just kind of like hug or
hold hands,
you know, and just be quiet and actually think about what is going to be here in 300 years. Like, we're not going to be here in 300 years. No one that we know or who will remember us is going to be here. And it's actually, to be fair, it's not really memento mori. It's more the view from above. It's more like, which is another really good one. It's one of my favorite kind of stoic ideas, which is taking your situation, which may seem really big and important. Like, where are we going to put the milk, or how are you cutting your cheese? It just sounds weird, but you know, and actually, whilst that is causing a lot of negative emotions in you right now, thinking about it in the grand scheme of things, and is it really important, is it really going to have an impact in your life in a day or in a week or in a year? And if the answer is no, then you actually probably need to kind of rethink your priorities and actually remember that, especially in a romantic relationship, what you've got is hopefully, I think in our case it is anyway, it's so much stronger than any little argument. And sometimes you just need to remind yourself that actually our relationship is stronger than this, and we can deal with this. Like, arguing about something little or even about something quite big doesn't have to break us, especially if it's not going to have a lasting impact. But yeah.
Nice.
But that's nothing to do with what is memento mori, and is that about stoicism? So I'll let you take that one.
No, that's cool. I mean, no, that really, I think, is great advice for relationship. Like, also in general, like the concept of memento mori, just to give a bit, and that was the final question as well. So We'll round it up with that. There is this, so memento mori. Memento means remember, And Mori means death, so remember death. But it really captures the concept of remember that you are mortal. Remember your mortality. There is this kind of story of like generals in a general in Rome guiding their army, and they're having a soldier, someone whispering in their ear, memento mori, remember that you are mortal. So that they don't get arrogant as they celebrate victory, or as they assume that they are the most powerful people in the world, or whatever. Like it's really about like also controlling your ego, kind of, and realizing that you're just a mortal. We're all just mortals. And as scary as it sounds, and as I don't know, I do understand, it's a very difficult concept to grasp. And the whole idea is that we cannot control the fact that everything ends, not just our lives, but everything, everyone we love. Like it's just quite tragic, and it's just one of those realities of life. But it doesn't have to mean suffering. It really doesn't have to just like be a full expression of fear. Like our society, the whole world is really in denial of death. And the big reason why everyone is always so distracted and always carried away by the superficial things is really because we don't want to think about the truth that scared us. And that is that things are ephemeral, that things come to an end. And that applies to anything. And I think that is also a good advice connecting it to relationships, like knowing that things will end, whether in good terms or bad terms. Like it's also a powerful motivator to make the most of what you have in the moment right now, because it won't be here forever. And it makes it a lot more valuable, because immortality or anything like that, anything long lasting and infinite, doesn't really have much value, because I mean, it doesn't lead anywhere. Like where do you go where you're like, if you're alive, I don't want to bring vampires into this. I don't know why. I don't know why I thought about vampires, but either way, their lives are pretty meaningless. So the takeaway is, don't be a vampire and remember your mortality, because it is the biggest motivator we have to let us know what is important in this moment and how to overcome all types of adversity. But like you say, thinking of the bigger picture, thinking of in the big scheme of things, does this matter? Does this make me a better person right now? Or does it hinder my progress as the person I want to become? That's it. Cool.
This is not your practice life.
Ah, that's a great concept. This is not your practice life. And yeah, like we have to go live it. And yeah, that's it. I feel there is one more question, but I think we'll address it real quick. It was like, what is our perspective on traveling? So I think like we just ended it in a really strong note, but let's just address this real quick as well, maybe to lighten up the mood a little bit.
No, let's talk about death more.
Yeah, I mean it's great, but it's quite hard, and I do understand if this hits you hard and be like, shit, shouldn't have said that. That was an explicit episode. Either way, but no. If it makes you go, nah, it doesn't matter. No. Oh, it didn't work. No, it is just answer the traveling question.
Oh, the traveling question. What's the traveling question? What do I think about traveling? Yeah. I think traveling is good. Yeah, I'd like to do more of it. I think experiencing different cultures and different places is a very valuable thing that I wish everyone had the chance to do. Obviously there's kind of different issues with flying and the environmental impacts of that, but just in terms of appreciating and learning about other people's cultures, and like the fact that there's so much more in this world, the world is so much bigger than you or your town or your country. And there's so many different points of views and different ways of living that we don't realize, especially in the Western world where we think we're better than everyone. Said sarcastically, by the way, but I mean, yeah. Not me, I just think society in general. I'm going to get told off now.
Yeah, no, I mean.
I know you're not.
Yeah, I am, because. And also announcement, well, if anyone cares, like we're moving back to Ecuador, where I'm from. Right now we're in England, but in general, like to... Don't do that. What are you doing? She was stepping on the chair, making a lot of noise. Either way, sorry. Sorry, you okay? Oh no, fighting life. We're fighting life.
Quick, momentum, Marino.
What was I saying? No, in general, like the traveling, I do believe it is super valuable. And for me to be here, like it's the first time I've lived outside of my country for an extended period of time. It's been a year and a half, maybe a bit more. It's super valuable to immerse yourself in another culture and to try to understand things from another perspective, especially if you get the chance to speak another language. That is amazing.
You are amazing, Santi.
Thank you. Thank you. No, it is an amazing experience to be able to go outside of your culture. But like, there are seasons in life and there are points where you probably can't travel. It could be financial or it could be because, I don't know, you have some responsibility like studying or a job that you actually love in the place where you are. So if it's in a place in your life where you actually circumstances don't allow you to travel that much, like don't worry about that too much because the good life can be lived anywhere. And yeah, that is an important concept because I think even like a message that is being pushed in social media a lot is you have to travel in order to live a meaningful life, or that you have to live a nomad life where you're moving from country to country in order to actually, you know, to make the most of life. That is superficial. It's not like that. It's not to that extent. And it doesn't mean that your life can't be meaningful if you're not traveling. It means that the good life can be lived anywhere. Go for it.
Okay. It just reminded me, I think there's a difference between traveling and running away from your problems. And I think it's something that Marcus Aurelius has said about like finding tranquility and peace by going inside your own mind. Like you don't have to go on holiday or go somewhere else to find inner peace. I think a lot of the time people, they go traveling or they make a drastic decision to move abroad, which we have just done, and me so more than Santi because I'm going to Ecuador, whereas he's kind of going back home. So it's something that I'm trying to remind myself quite a lot nowadays is actually, yeah, we're going to make this big change, but that isn't going to make everything better. It's not going to suddenly make our lives amazing, and all of the issues that we might have had here are suddenly going to go away because we're in a different place and everything's a fresh start and really exciting, like new year, new me, 2020. So I think actually traveling is important, but it depends what you want to get out of it. If you're running away from something and trying to become like a new you by traveling, I think the environment you're in, the place where you are, isn't going to change that. You have to do that from within. Yeah.
Nice. That was deep. No, in general, like wherever you go, there you are. You cannot run away from yourself. But it also means that everything that you are in the moment, like, I mean, it's good and bad, right? Like if you think of traveling as a place where you can like go find yourself, well, you will, because you will always be there. You cannot escape from yourself, so you better start liking yourself, because that is the person you have to spend all your time with. Like some people say, like, no, it's a relationship. Like, oh no, your girlfriend is the person you spend the most time with, or your boyfriend, whatever. But it really is you. So don't think of traveling as an experience where you'll find yourself. Probably there will be things that will trigger new ways of thinking. It's definitely possible, and there are definitely ways how you can grow from it, and I believe you could, but it's not a necessary thing in order to grow. And yeah, there you go.
Cool.
Yeah. Anything extra to add before we wrap it up?
That is great. I don't think so. I'm amazed we were able to talk for over an hour. I always start these things being like, how on earth are we going to have a whole conversation? Not that we don't talk all the time, but have a whole conversation that lasts more than 45 minutes. But, you know, forget you're a chatterbox, so it's okay.
All right. So, yeah, with that being said, thank you, Marina, for all your questions. Very, very, like, what?
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, no, they're very elaborate, and they did give us a lot of things to think about. If there's anyone else who might be interested in, like, I don't know, either asking us more questions, if you want us to do this again, or anything, feel free to send me an email. It's in the show notes. And yeah, we'd love to hear from you if you have any thoughts to share or anything you would like to add. That's about it. Okay. Yeah. Ready? Any thoughts? No?
Good. No, I just want to say goodbye.
Goodbye. You just want to say goodbye. And bye. Memento mori.